This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Joey Isaacs, a professional bettor, tennis handicapper, will join us. We will talk some U.S. Open. Mix things up a little because we've done so much baseball, football, just bouncing back and forth between the two. And look, once football starts, and it's about to start college football the full weekend this week coming up in college football. And then before you know it, a few days after that, NFL, and we'll be off and going NFL, Major League Baseball pennant races. So we'll be fun to mix it up a little bit with Joey. He's really good when it comes to tennis. So excited to talk to him, but we'll get to the baseball in a minute, but it was a good football weekend. You know, we did the show Friday and even last week talking about these college football games. And, you know, I joked around, hey, it's not exactly Georgia versus Alabama or Michigan, Ohio State. The games ended up being tremendous. The first one, Georgia Tech and Florida State. Georgia Tech, 10.5-point underdog, wins at the buzzer. Last second field goal as time expires, and they were the better team. DJ Uiagalelei, who has just bounced around school to school to school, been on 9 million teams in 3 or 4 years. He stunk. He was absolutely awful. And Florida State was the short shot, the favorite to win the ACC at like plus 250, plus 270, depending on when, where you bet it. That team looked awful. And, you know, DJ Alphabet, as they call him, he did not look the part. And that did not look like one of those wins where the 10-point underdog wins and you say, boy, how did that happen? Turnovers, fluke. Georgia Tech was really the better team. Florida State got up 8-0 early. After that, it was all Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech really could have won the game by more. They had a wide receiver slip for a wide open touchdown, left some points on the field with field goals, fourth downs, things like that. And in Florida State, made a bunch of long kicks. So that really could have been a more lopsided victory for Georgia Tech. So store that away. Boston College, Florida State this week, and week 0 to week 1, week 1 to week 2, NFL college is typically overreaction week. So keep that in mind, but people are going to see this BC Florida State line open 19.5 down to 17. I would imagine that continues to go down. So if you like BC, take the points now. And my guess that closes, you know, 15, 16, 14.5. Those are all kind of dead numbers. You want every point, every half point you can get. But my guess is that closes closer to 14 than 17, just because Florida State looked so bad. And it was a standalone game where everybody's watching. So the games were good. New Mexico and Montana State, the 4 o'clock game on Saturday was one of the wilder games you'll ever see, where New Mexico led pretty much wire to wire. Had a 17-point lead with the ball, missed a short field goal, got the ball back with a 10-point lead, dropped a pass that would have sealed the game, got the ball back again with a chance where another wide-open drop would have sealed the game. They blow that, and they end up punting. And even with that, and they were a good 14-point underdog, 13.5-point underdog, it's a 10-point margin with like 2 minutes to go, and Montana State rips off a 95-yard touchdown run, gets a 3-and-out, gets the ball back, and not only scores a touchdown, but milks the clock in a way where they score a touchdown with like 10 seconds left, and they end up winning the game by 4 points. Just an incredible collapse by New Mexico. So the games were good on Saturday. The dogs were barking. And then the night game was SMU. It was like a 28-point favorite. It was really lucky to just win the game. They didn't cover. They snuck the game out. They were down 11 with like 6-7 minutes to go. Nevada wins. Nevada covers. SMU wins. And then the nightcap, even that game, Hawaii is a 40-point favorite. I think it was like 14-7 at the half. Hawaii wins the game, but they don't come close to covering the number. The game stays under. So the underdogs went 4-0. The games were fun. The games were competitive. So hopefully that is a preview of things to come here in the college football season. Just good games. Really from the afternoon all the way until the night, just upsets brewing, underdogs barking, games being competitive, the underdogs just hanging in all of these games and really could have won just about any of these games. Just wild, wild games in college football. Quickly on the baseball, before we get to Joey Isaacs and talk some U.S. Open, the Yankees, I thought we were doing the show Thursday going into Friday, and I thought the Yankees had a chance to blow this race open because they were up by 2 in the loss column going into Friday. They beat Colorado, and it looked like Baltimore was going to lose Friday. They were down big late, and then they were down again Saturday. They stole both games, and in between that, the Yankees drop a game to the Rockies. So all in all, the Orioles do end up losing a game to the Astros in this, in these three games since we talked, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Baltimore wins Friday, wins Saturday, loses Sunday. Yankees win 2 out of 3 against Colorado. But all things considered, when if you could just freeze time at a moment Friday night, Yankees looked like they were going to have a 3-game lead in the loss column. And the next 5 for Baltimore were Houston and at the Dodgers. Meanwhile, the Yankees, their next 5 was the Rockies and the Nationals. It looked like the Yankees were going to start to pull away. And, you know, if you gave me true serum at that point Friday night, hey, how many games are the Yankees going to lead by Monday, Tuesday, whatever? I would have said maybe 4, maybe 5 in the loss column. It's still only 2 in the loss column. And all things considered here, if you're Baltimore, you kind of dodged the bullet. You managed to hang in here. But it looked like the Yankees had a good chance to land a salvo here and just sort of pull away and gain some separation. Yankees drop a game. Baltimore rallies Friday. Baltimore rallies Sunday. So maybe we're in here for the long haul. I still favor the Yankees. Yankees minus 230 here in the division. And Baltimore maybe dodges a bullet in terms of being just put away here. Remember, Baltimore has the tiebreaker. We don't play a tiebreaker game anymore. There are no game 163. So Baltimore 2 back in the loss column, but they do have the tiebreaker and they just sort of avoid danger. Now, look, they still got games against the Dodgers. Meanwhile, the Yankees have games against the Nationals. And boy, what Judge is doing. My goodness, 51 homers now, 2 more homers on Sunday. You get to the point where you're almost surprised. You see the Yankees score, you see the Yankees, just box score in general. You're almost surprised he doesn't homer. It is just incredible. One of the handful of great seasons ever, maybe the best right-handed hitting season of all time. What Judge is doing is just to the point where you almost, you feel guilty that you're almost taking it for granted. He has been that good. The MVP race is over. He's going to win the MVP. Would think Ohtani's going to win the MVP in the NL as he had a walk-off grand slam Friday night. Now, there's starting to be a little bit of a case for Lindor. Hey, what he does on defense, the homers, the versatility, but it's going to be Judge. It's going to be Ohtani. Judge will win his second. Ohtani will win his third. And that's the baseball. The other thing that's interesting in terms of the races here, Cleveland has not pulled away, but they've got a couple game lead here on the Royals, but they play 4 games, doubleheader Monday, game on Tuesday, game on Wednesday. They play 7 times over the next week. And if you look at the schedule here for the Royals, if they play well, they can overtake Cleveland and get a chance to steal this division. But Cleveland here, and if you're the Red Sox, you're thinking, hey, maybe we have a chance to get back in the mix here and steal a spot, because the Royals next, 10, 12, 14 games here, 4 at Cleveland, 3 at Houston. I'm sorry, that is 4 at Houston. So 4 at Cleveland, 4 at Houston, which is just a brutal 8-game stretch. Then 3 more against the Guardians in Kansas City, 3 more against the Twins in Kansas City, and then they go to Yankee Stadium for 3 games. So that is a brutal. The next like half a month for the Royals puts them in a scenario where, hey, if they don't play well, Boston, who's 4 back in the loss column, which look, 4 in the loss is a significant deficit at this point. But maybe Boston's in a position where they can get back in the race here and steal a spot, because this next 15, 16 games here for the Royals is an absolute gauntlet of a schedule. If they play well, they can overtake Cleveland. If they don't play well, maybe they drop out altogether. So Yankees and Royals is a good race. The AL Central is a good race. Maybe the Royals, let teams back into it in terms of the Red Sox. I don't think the Mariners can make a run, but look, with that pitching, who knows? Maybe they can rip off 6-7 in a row and make things interesting. I said this last week, I kind of get the sense we have our 12 teams, because I don't think the Mets are catching the Braves. Mets with a bad loss against the Padres Sunday, blow a late 2-0 lead, and the Braves lose a game, but hey, no harm, no foul, because the Mets lose one. I don't think the Giants are going to put things together. So it's possible the 12 teams that would make the playoffs if they started today are the 12 teams we see here in October, but a lot of baseball to be played. These races are good. These races are fun. The baseball is competitive. Day in and day out, these are really fun games to watch. And again, what Judge is doing, I just can't understand why these teams pitch to him. I don't get it. Yankees had old-timers day on Saturday, which, boy, if you want to feel old, you turn on the S Network and you watch old-timers day featuring A-Rod and Derek Jeter and Jorge Posada, and you just feel like a million years old. But all these guys, Sabathia, Jeter, A-Rod, they were all asked about Judge, and they pretty much all had the same answer. Hey, why does anyone have to pitch to him? And I completely agree. I mean, why pitch to him? One base is better than 4 bases. I just don't understand why these teams insist on being so stubborn and trying to challenge Judge. And You know, that's the baseball. We you know, talked a little football, talked a little baseball. And you know, you turn the calendar here, the summer's pretty much over. It's getting dark a little earlier. Kids back to school, and my goodness, if your kids are going back to school any earlier than this, this is about as early as it gets. August 26th. If your kids go to school earlier than that, that's un-American, but boy, that's really cutting your summer short here. But it does feel like summer just flew by and football got here very, very quickly. Just the summer. You may think back to, I mean, we're sitting here talking the NBA finals. It feels like a couple weeks ago, but that's months ago now. And that's early June, mid-June. And boy, this summer just flew by. These years and seasons just continue to get shorter and shorter, it seems like. But coming up next, we'll talk a little tennis. Joey Isaacs, one of the best tennis bettors around. We'll talk some U.S. Open. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. Let's talk a little U.S. Open. He is Joey Isaacs, professional bettor. He specializes in tennis. Excited to talk to him. Excited to meet him. Joey, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on. It should be fun.
Yeah, what's going on? It's good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
All right, it's U.S. Open time. So I guess we'll start with the men here. Would you classify this? Would you characterize this as a tournament that's top heavy and it's going to be chalk, or would you consider it more wide open?
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's super wide open. I would make the four guys have like a realistic chance, and that's Djokovic, Sinner, Alcaraz, and Zverev. I put Zverev actually as the second best player going into this tournament. Djokovic gets a bump too, as he got a really nice draw. And Alcaraz hurt himself a little with his ankle in practice, but I don't think that's going to be a big deal. And then you have the whole drama with the steroid cream with Sinner that could be, you know, looming over his head a bit as the tournament progresses.
What do you make of the story with Sinner?
I truly don't know. You always look at other players' reactions, and I think that a lot of their reactions are about the ATP should really be fair and the same to everybody and not just, you know, pick and choose their punishments. So as opposed to, they think that he's a cheater. So I always think that's interesting to see how they react, but I don't think that he's a cheater, but his coach has been in trouble before with his last student, whatever you want to call it, with Halep. So it's hard to like totally think that he's innocent, but they run a good PR program. He's gotten Darren Cahill's gone ahead of the crowd. He's done his ESPN interview. He's shielding Sinner, and they're going to handle it well.
Is there a perception? Is there an unspoken thing? Like most players are doing something that's on the borderline to help them get better, almost like steroids in the 90s in baseball, or is that not necessarily the case here in tennis?
I don't think that's the case. And I listen to Andy Roddick's podcast quite often, and he even talked about how, like, if he just goes on like a vacation with his wife, he has to let the testing know where what hotel he's staying at, because he could be tested any day during a non-tournament week, etc. So it's a very hard sport to get away with it. So I definitely think they're clean, but I definitely do think there are players who are probably gaming the system. But I would say that tennis might have a problem with gambling more than performance enhancers.
Interesting. What do you mean by that? Players?
I think fixing matches, umpires really? Fixing. I mean, you never really know, but I think that's probably at the lower level, especially, it's going to happen. And it's just one of those things, but it is what it is. In individual sport, it's always going to happen.
Interesting. Alcaraz 2-1. I'm just looking at DraftKings shop around, and you can, you know, sure, cite any other book. Alcaraz 2-1. Djokovic plus 250, Sinner plus 350, Zverev 8-1. You sort of want to cut it off there. Any value in any of those numbers or not necessarily?
I played Zverev 12-1. I think that's and nothing big, but that's about, if you're looking for, you know, a not 2-1 to win a tournament, then I think Zverev's the guy. He also does have a history of choking in big moments, so he's not really a guy you can be that confident with, but he did some things leading up to this U.S. Open that are impressive. Like, you know, he's known as having a pretty weak forehand, which is unusual for men. Usually they're more forehand dominant. And he's hitting his forehand with about five, six miles an hour more than normal on hard courts. So I've been very impressed with him leading up to this tournament.
if it's not one of the big four, maybe even not to win the tournament, but make a semifinal, make a surprise run into final, where would you go? Rublev 40-1, Medvedev 16-1, Fritz 50-1, Rune 65-1, Tommy Paul 80-1, any of those guys, somebody else? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I would go Berrettini, maybe. You know, he plays Fritz, I think, second round. I'm trying to find my draw. It's the women's. But yeah, he's that guy, kind of the dark horse that I would look at. I also do think that if you look at that side, Monfils is, you know, he's got Casper Ruud second round. I do think he can win that match. And that's the section that I would try to find. And it actually is Zverev's section, but that's the section that I would try to find value. If you want to bet someone to make the quarterfinals, it's truly wide open. Tons of players are playing well. And I don't know if you have odds pulled up for it, but yeah, Monfils could do it. Holger Rune, Nakashima even. I mean, so there's a lot of guys who can lose first round, but then they could also easily make the semifinals when they make win a couple matches.
There are, there's so many different options for betting this. Half winner, top half winner, bottom half winner, quarters, stage of elimination. I guess we'll go quarters. Anything in the quarter interest you on any of these markets? Sinner, favorite in quarter one, minus 165. Alcaraz, minus 230. Quarter two, Zverev, plus 120. The short shot in quarter three. And then Djokovic in quarter four is minus 230. You know, take it whatever direction you want to go.
Sure. Let's look at quarter three. I actually like, I think just looking at that draw, there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 10, almost 9 guys that I wouldn't be shocked if they make the semifinals, which is kind of crazy. I would look at Pablo Carreño Busta. What odds does he have?
And you're talking to win the, which quarter is this?
Three.
Three, Carreño.
Zverev's quarter.
Wait, I'm not seeing it for some reason. Quarter three, Carreño Busta is...
He might not even be listed.
Wow, 100-1.
100-1. So that's I think you can do a lot worse. I really liked what I saw from him this weekend, and then he did pull out with an injury, but it really was more of a, hey, you know, I've played my matches. He's coming back from injury. He's the guy who was playing Djokovic, I believe, when Djokovic famously hit the line judge, and then he made the semifinals before. So, you know, he's a Masters 1000 winner. He's a Grand Slam semifinalist, and he's coming back from injury, and he looked great to me. And he's not going to be a big underdog. He really shouldn't be in any of these matches. So until Zverev, but he really impressed me, and these courts are playing a little slow. So I think that'll help him a little, and a little slower than they reported it, at least. So that's where I would go if you want a crazy long shot. The other guys that you could go in that section is obviously Berrettini or Holger Rune could definitely make some noise. He's probably what, 6-1?
Rune is just, I was just pulling up just to bet Carreño Busta, which is in. Yeah. 7-1. So I'm seeing 7-1 to win quarter three.
So that's, I mean, you could go that way too. So I would look at those guys. Quarter three is the one that I really think has the most value in terms of a long shot coming through. Djokovic, I just don't see one guy there giving him any trouble, unless he hasn't played since the Olympics, so you never know, but he really knows what he's doing in terms of his body and his preparation, so you have to just assume that he's going to be full gear, full all cylinders, ready to fire and be great. So I wouldn't touch. And then Sinner, you know, he has a hip injury, but he's a pretty easy draw, so I would look at quarter three for the men. And and there,
and then anything match wise first round here that you like?
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple. I think the way you say it is Tomas. Tomas, and then Martin, not Martin, but Thomas Martin. I'll just say it the American way. Playing a guy's name that I can't really pronounce that well. He's a French kid. He serves like 140 miles an hour. Giovanni Metsi Pericard. I hope I said it right.
Nailed it.
Thank you. And I really like that matchup for individual betting on the first, and it's actually in quarter three. Look at us. So yeah, that's one of my favorite bets of the round one in the men's side.
Okay. Anything else men's that you think is worth talking about before we move on to the women's?
Another bet I really liked was Echeverry versus Eubanks. And fading another big server, but it's supposed to be a little slower. And I know Eubanks won a couple matches in Winston-Salem, and you know he's been struggling to win all year. But to me, he's complete fade material. He really can't hit a backhand, and I just don't see how he's going to win this match. So that's another one of my favorite matches on round one.
All right, the women's. We'll go same sort of format here.
Sure.
Wide open or chalk?
Wide open.
Okay.
I think we can see a first time Grand Slam winner, and wouldn't be surprised. I think Sabalenka's rightfully the favorite, probably around like plus 280 ish.
Yes, it is. Let me pull up the odds exactly. Plus 240. I'm seeing it. DraftKings, of course, okay. Shop around. Iga's plus 370. Then you get everyone else double digits. Coco Gauff 10 to 1. Pagula 12 to 1. Rybakina 12 to 1. Andreeva 22 to 1. Osaka 28 to 1. Danielle freaking Collins 30 to 1. And look, we saw it in Wimbledon. I think you were at Wimbledon, right? Just a wide open, a crazy tournament on the women's side with a lot of long shots, and chalk was not the way to go. So you could sense a similar sort of, you know, March Madness kind of tournament here where all hell can break loose.
100%. I think it's wide open. Trying to guess the winner. I mean, if you want the field versus, I'd say the top two players are Sabalenka and then Swiatek. And then there's a big dip. I think Coco Gauff's in, you know, poor form going in. While last year I had a big future on her. I don't have really any futures on the women's side, but last year I had a big Coco Gauff future. She really was playing just excellent, and I thought that she was head and shoulders above the rest of the field in every single matchup she was going to have. I don't feel that way about any woman, maybe Sabalenka, but you know, Pagula's coming in great form. If you want to look at someone coming in great form, which sometimes translates, sometimes doesn't. And I'd say Pagula, Sabalenka, you know, Badosa. Badosa's a really hot player that's probably around like 40 to 1. I don't think she can win the tournament, but I do see her. I can see quarterfinals. And so, yeah, that's kind of where my head's at with the women's. If you want to take a look at some of the individual matchups,
sure,
that I got ready for us, there's a girl named Dodin playing Kalisinka. I don't know how to say the name, but Kalinina. I never have to pronounce the name, so I'm not good at that. But she hasn't played since Wimbledon. And before that, she pulled out of a match on clay. So it's one match in 4 or 5 months. She's clearly injured. She lost the last set at Wimbledon 6-0. She's probably showing up for a paycheck. And the girl she's playing is one of the most fit girls on tour. She makes tons of balls, and Dodin can win points with her big serve, but she's not going to be moving well. And so I see like a complete two-set blowout coming. So I think it's like minus 160 for Kalina and two, and I like that.
How about quarter? Anything in any of these quarters interest you?
No, I think when you said Osaka was 28 to 1, that was kind of funny because I don't think she can win a match. She has a probably the best matchup. She plays Ostapenko first round, and they don't have the order of play out. But if it's a day match, I think that Osaka can win, but I don't see it. I think that the US Open will put this match at night. It's a great matchup. If you remember last year, Ostapenko beat Swiatek at night. She's probably the most, like, if you want to talk like day game, night game in baseball splits, like there's not really many tennis players besides her that's like night and day split wise. Like, she's great in the night. She's just not fit. I don't know. I don't want to be rude. That's not her strength. And the night session just is, you know, both these girls are going to, it's going to be short points. It's going to be great, you know, ball striking. And I just wouldn't want to, I just don't see how Osaka's favored to beat this girl at night. So that's me.
All right.
I guess a long shot to me would be Kasatkina.
And how would you play her for the quarter or to win the whole thing?
I could see her winning the whole thing. I could see her losing first round, but she's someone that I kind of think could make a run. The girl who won Monterey, you never want to win the tournament before the Grand Slam. It's tough, but she looked absolutely amazing to me. And I think she's around 100-1. There's a lot worse you can do at 100-1. Her name is Noskova, and she just hits the crap out of the ball. So the points are going to be on her racket, and she beat some good players, and she can make a run.
Let's see here. Let me run through the quarters and see if anything jumps out to you. Iga, quarter one, even money. Second quarter, Rybakina, the short shot, plus 175. Third quarter, Coco Gauff, plus 150. The fourth quarter, Sabalenka is odds on, minus 175. Any of those jump out to you of, hey, this is overpriced, underpriced, you're looking to fade anything, or not necessarily value there?
You know, Coco Gauff to me is just, she has a lot of issues right now. I think, you know, this is an interesting year because of the whole Olympics getting in the way. And I think, you know, tennis players are very set in their schedule and their traveling and their ways, and their, you know, their way every year is the same in so many ways. And, you know, this Olympics, you know, they went from clay courts to grass and then back to clay. And now, and I think some players like her are struggling to adapt back to hard courts and the schedule change. So I don't really see her making a run, especially with all the pressure to defend the title. Who else is in her section? Because I'm not
quarter three. Bedosa's plus 550. I know a lot of people are on Bedosa and think she could make a run. Are you you're a believer
that's,
in her?
That, I just, yeah, that's who I would say has a good chance to make a run.
Yeah, third quarter I have Gauff plus 150, Bedosa plus 550, Navarro plus 650, Svitlona 8-1, Krejčíková 8-1, Sakkari 12-1. Then you know Azarenka's 21, Sloane Stephens is 25-1, Taylor Townsend's 25-1.
That's actually so perfect. Yeah, I would look at Svitolina to make a run. She impressed me even in her loss in Monterey, and she is a, you know, a great Grand Slam player with a lot of experience, and I think these courts actually suit her pretty perfectly. And then I know you said Sloane Stephens. That is one of my she's a night match tomorrow, the first night match for the women's, I believe. She is in absolute terrible form, and she's playing a girl who, you know, had some wins last week, had some good, decent player. I think the girl should be more favored than minus 125. And I do like her to beat Sloane Stephens tomorrow pretty easily.
Okay. You had an interesting tweet. I think it was you who said, if you go to the US Open and you're betting courtside, some of these accounts, they, you know, some of these books know where you are, and they're going to limit you or cut you off or shut down your account because they think you're getting over on them, getting an advantage. Is that, was that you who tweeted that?
Yeah, that was me. So last week was qualifying. It's free, so anyone can go, and it's not packed. You can probably be like on any court you want. And, you know, I had three calls that said I was betting the qualifying, the live, and I get home and my account's shut down. And so courtside is very hard. I asked, did you win? They said, no. Did you courtside? They said, I tried. And what I was saying is that it's very hard nowadays to courtside unless you have good technology, which you have to be a very professional operation to have. The other option is to be very good about knowing, like, you know, the player hits a very defensive short lob where it's just a sitter and you get it in right before they hit that winner. The other way is to have a slow umpire. And some people know which umpires are very slow. There's a few around, mostly they're at the doubles matches. You can sneak in sometimes that way, but it's very hard. And so I don't know what FanDuel is thinking, but they shut down all the accounts. And I recommended all of these kids to just say, I'm going to take you to gaming. They did, and the accounts came back right away.
Wow. Fascinating. That is interesting. What before we wrap up here, anything just big picture, because that's more of a big picture betting thing. I mean, any takeaways on just like the state of betting? I mean, you're on Twitter, you see all this stuff, yeah. People getting limited, people asking for refunds, you know, take it whatever direction you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, I sit from afar as much as I can, but sometimes I jump in. I have a lot of thoughts. You got to ask something specific. What about walking bets?
There you go. Walking bets. Your thoughts. Go ahead.
I think it's ridiculous. And some of these people need to step outside and take a real walk. Like, just, you know, I think, you know, what would be an amazing thing to do is just to actually, if you're so worried about pounding or someone doing something else, like, just actually show you betting, like clicking computer bets. I'm just waiting for someone to do that. Like, this is me actually clicking the bet. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that it's a very healthy business right now, and a very, you know, a fun space, and make the most of it, meet some nice friends, and just stay out of drama as much as you can with these things like walking bets. And it's also like, the truth is that anytime I see something this, you know, crazy and people are so up in the air, I forget that I look and I see that they're like 26 years old, and I'm like, this makes complete sense. Yes. Like, when you're older, you are not going to care about these little things. Like, this other girl is doing a walking bet. That was my thing. It's like, you know what? We can both walk and bet.
Yeah. And for people that don't know, which I'm sure some people listening do and some people don't, there's a controversy, content creators over, you know, a little gimmick they had where they're walking and talking about their bets at the same time. So yeah, a lot of that's one where you step away from your phone and you come back and you're like, all these messages, this back and forth where it is hard to keep up with. But Joey, I appreciate it, man. You did a great job. This was long overdue. Good luck in the tournament. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, Joey Isaacs on Twitter. I think it says it spelled right, Isaks. Yeah, and just shoot me a message, DM, if you have any questions. I'll try to post some plays, and hopefully we can all make some money this next 2 weeks.
All right, appreciate the time, man. We'll have to do it again soon.
Yeah, anytime.
All right, thank you to Joey Isaacs. We will be back Wednesday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Wednesday.